over the weekend, we don't anticipate anything dramatic happening. We just continue to steam towards Dutch Harbor.
The NOAM fuel delivery effort gets a waiver from the Jones Act. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the state wants more information about subsistence practices in Bethel.
What we'll do is survey a sample of Bethel households in order to ask about big game harvests by hunters in the community.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, which has been providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory.
And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The Department of Homeland Security has granted a Jones Act waiver for the Russian tanker Renda to load gasoline in Dutch Harbor before heading through the ice to Nome. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story.
Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano granted the request this afternoon after consulting with the Departments of Defense, Energy, the Coast Guard, and the Maritime Administration. Federal law requires that the waiver be, quote, necessary in the interest of national defense. The waiver filed by Vitus Marine on behalf of Sitnasauk argued that Nome's fuel was indirectly necessary for national security, as Sitnasauk counts the troopers as customers and says airport maintenance relies on the fuel. Vitus Marine CEO Mark Smith says the quick action speaks to the importance of the delivery.
I think the waiver came through quickly because it's obviously an urgent matter. You know, as far as to what arguments won the day in D.C., I can't speak to that because I don't know. What I can say is that I think everyone agrees that Nome is a critical hub for any action involving the Far East. It's a natural jumping off point. It has an international airport. So there's a lot of reasons why I think Nome and the fuel supply to Nome is extremely critical.
As part of the process, the government also had to ensure that there were no American flagged ships that could be used. Without the waiver, the Renda would have gone directly to Nome with just the diesel on board. Alaska's congressional delegation pushed for the agency to act quickly and grant a waiver. Senator Begich's office praised the decision this afternoon. Begich spokesperson Julie Haskett.
We know it's hard to get a Jones Act waiver, but he felt that we needed to be on this. We've been actively engaged, and since he has written those two letters, he's been involved with our staff, who's been really in day-to-day contact with the Department of Homeland Security, basically saying, okay, what's happening here? How is this going? We'd like to see a waiver. And then today we got the good news that they have given the Jones Act waiver for this case.
Vitus Marine has submitted its delivery plans to be approved by the state by filing an amendment to its oil discharge prevention and contingency plan to incorporate the cold weather considerations. Smith says there are decades of case studies from the North Slope on how to move fuel in the cold and to respond in emergencies.
Although this is an unusual transaction for Nome, truly fuel is delivered around the state, across ice, in frigid temperatures as a matter of course. So even though the circumstances might be special, an over ice transfer, a transfer in bitter cold is not an unusual fuel transfer.
Plans call for the staging of thousands of feet of boom, along with pumps, absorbent material, and having air support from the Coast Guard. But before the delivery is made, the Renda still needs to get its full payload and be inspected. The Renda is now sailing towards Dutch Harbor, and earlier today reported in from 150 miles south of Attu.
We're just in transit. This is the last 3 days, so the activity will start once we get into Dutch Harbor again. That'll be Monday night, Tuesday morning. So over the weekend, we don't anticipate anything dramatic happening. We just continue to steam towards Dutch Harbor.
The Coast Guard hopes to complete the port state inspection in Dutch Harbor before the icebreaker Healy joins up and the two vessels sail together to the ice edge and then break through 300 miles of ice to Nome. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
The 15-year-old boy who was found dead in a Bethel park has been identified. Bethel police say he is Kelton Achak of Bethel. Achak had been reported missing, and local search and rescue volunteers, Alaska State Troopers, and police had been looking for him. He was found Thursday afternoon beside his snow machine, which was undamaged. Police do not suspect foul play and sent his remains to the State Medical Examiner's Office in Anchorage for an autopsy. Scientists have downgraded the aviation alert level for Cleveland Volcano from orange to yellow. The volcano lies on a major international flight path, and yesterday it put up a 15,000-foot ash cloud. That prompted the Alaska Volcano Observatory to increase the warning level, even though the plume wasn't expected to interfere with aviation. Scientist in charge John Power says they've lowered the alert because the ash cloud has dissipated. He says they still don't know exactly what happened to the lava dome that's been formed in the crater since early July.
We, at this point in time, don't have real detailed imagery or any further information on what's happened within the crater following yesterday morning's explosion.
Cleveland has historically been a very active volcano. Its last major eruption in 2001 sent up a series of three plumes, some of them reaching 39,000 feet. Power says he suspects Cleveland isn't done with this eruptive phase just yet.
Given that it's been so active since last June or July up till now, we do sort of expect to see more going on here over the next, coming weeks to months. And we'll certainly update the information on our webpage and so on as conditions change.
There's no real-time monitoring network on Cleveland, but the observatory does have an alert system that can detect the lightning that accompanies major ash clouds within minutes. Yesterday's eruption wasn't large enough to produce lightning. It showed up later on satellite imagery. Boeing Company beat out Lockheed Martin to retain its position as the prime contractor for the U.S. long-range missile shield, the Pentagon said today. The U.S. Defense Department said it was awarding Boeing a $3.48 billion seven-year contract to develop, test, engineer, and manufacture missile defense systems. A team led by Lockheed Martin Corporation and Raytheon Company had vied with Boeing to expand and maintain the ground-based mid-course defense, or GMD, hub of anti-missile protection. GMD uses radar and other sensors, plus a 20,000-mile fiber optic communications network to cue interceptors in silos at Fort Greely outside of Fairbanks and Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. Boeing partnered with Northrop Grumman Corporation. The GMD contract's value to Boeing will have been about $18 billion from January 2001 through the end of this year. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a proposed new long-distance race for personal watercraft up Alaska's coast.
Kodiak, Old Harbor, Alitak, Chignik, Perryville, Sandpoint, King Cove, Cold Bay, False Pass.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is interested in researching Bethel residents' big game subsistence practices. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Mark Earhart reports.
We're proposing a project called the Lower Kuskokwim Big Game Project.
That's Dave Ronfola, subsistence research specialist for the Department of Fish and Game.
It's going to be a survey conducted by the Department of Fish and Game Division of Subsistence. And what we'll do is survey a sample of Bethel households in order to ask about big game harvests by hunters in the community.
He says this type of door-to-door survey is key to understanding what's happening in big game populations of caribou, moose, and other animals.
We're interested in cooperating with local subsistence users and community organizations in Bethel so that we can have the most accurate big game harvest estimates.
The survey is different than the harvest tickets that hunters turn in at the end of each season. Philip Perry, the state area management biologist, said harvest tickets are important and still need to be turned in, but they aren't always an accurate representation of big game harvests.
Because it's voluntary, compliance with it is highly variable, and normally it's not very good.
The department wants to improve accuracy and have a better knowledge of how many big game animals are being taken in the lower Kuskokwim and surrounding regions.
Subsistence harvest survey like this is a good way to improve that accuracy. And Bethel, since it's the largest community of the region, in the center of an area where many residents are typically very active subsistence harvesters, it's very important for the department to have accurate harvest estimates that will ensure effective management, as well as support continued customary and traditional use of wilder resources by area residents.
Runfola said the survey results would be confidential and used to make sure big game species like the Mulchatna herd of caribou thrive and are available for subsistence harvesting in the future.
We'll ask people to tell us how many animals of different species were harvested by household members, as well as where the animals were harvested. And we're going to ask about all big game harvests of each household, not just those that took place nearby.
Runfola said the department also plans to involve some community members in administering the survey, which is scheduled to start in March. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
It's mushing season again, but one Alaskan is asking coastal communities to consider embracing a new kind of dog race. It involves teams riding personal watercraft more than 2,000 miles along the state's coastline. As KDLG's Daisha Eaton reports, the Alaska Wet Dog Race is set for 2013.
If everything goes as planned, the Alaskan Wet Dog Race will be the longest personal watercraft race in the world.
Typically, most watercraft events are very small. They do what they call circuit racing. They put in buoys in a little lake, and they run these laps around these buoys, and they try to, the whole team of them, people take off, 10, 15 people take off at a time, and they race around these buoys. The Alaskan Wet Dog Race is completely different.
That's John Lang, who's coordinating the Alaskan Wet Dog Race. The proposed route runs more than 2,000 miles from Whittier to Lake Iliamna.
The proposed course at this particular time will start in Whittier, run through Prince William Sound, hit 23 to 25 different checkpoints and towns, through False Pass into Bristol Bay and up through to Port Muller, Port Hyden, Igigig, Naknek, and up Naknek, you go up the Kwajak River to Igigig, and then across to Iliamna.
Lang says he's in the process of applying for all the necessary permits from the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. The race, he says, is 2,062 miles long. If a person averages 30 miles per hour and takes the mandatory 64 hours of rest, Lang says they should finish the race in about 5.5 days. The race entry fee is $35,000 per person. The fee is all-inclusive and covers fuel, food, rooms, dry suits, float coats, and 127 support boats throughout the course, plus more. There'll be two-person teams, and the race is limited to 500 teams total. It's a timed race with a staggered start. Fueling will be done in ports and is off the clock. Fans will be able to track racers through transponders via a website. The race will start in Anchorage after all racers attend several days of safety classes. Lang says he tested portions of the route in 2009.
In 2009, we did what we called a paving the way trip, and we did a large portion of the course. We were able to do from Anchorage all the way down to the bottom of Kodiak Island and along and over to White Bay, which was as far as we got. But we fully intend to run the rest of the course.
Some personal watercraft users have a bad reputation, Lang admits, for being disrespectful. He wants to reassure coastal communities along the wet dog route that those competing in his race will be held to high standards.
The Alaskan Wet Dog Race, safety is our top priority, and protection of the environment and wildlife and everything like that is the number one priority, and we will absolutely disqualify anybody if we find them breaking federal laws, such as harassing wildlife or anything like that.
Lang says he's been developing the race for more than a decade, working closely with state and federal agencies, and he's using the race to showcase his sport.
I spend a lot of time out on the water on these machines, and I have for years, and I wanted to do something to bust the paradigm that people have that these watercrafts are not anything more than a thrill craft limited to lakes and rivers. These are very versatile machines. The possibilities to do long-range ocean trips are absolutely viable. And that's where we're gearing towards, is to show people what they're capable of.
Lang says the racers will not go through any area that bans personal watercraft, including Homer's Kachemak Bay. He says he hopes the race will bring dollars to the towns that racers do stop in along the way.
One of the biggest reasons that I'm doing this is to help enhance the economies of these little towns and villages and the over 28,000 residents that live along this 2,000-mile course. This will be an economic boon, an unexpected gift to these towns and villages every year to be an annual event. It'll be like the Iditarod or the Iron Dog does for all the villages in the interior.
The Alaska Wet Dog Race is slated to begin May 1st, 2013. Lang says he has more than 300 signed letters of intent from people who want to participate in the event. There'll be a $4 million purse. Lang says individual racers will be gathering sponsors in 2012. You can learn more about the Alaskan Wet Dog Race at www.wetdograce.com. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
In this last week of 2011, APRN and member station reporters from across the state have been reflecting on the stories of this past year that stood out for them, some because they were important or difficult to report on, or, as in this first story from Sitka, because they were fun.
This is Robert Woolsey at KCAW in Sitka. Since I'm mainly the morning host at Raven Radio, time is at a premium when I do stories, which is why I dreaded going to Blatchley Middle School back in February to interview kids about the new Fish in Schools program. It takes a long time to get kids to speak. They're either mesmerized by the equipment or they're just shy and they don't say much. But it turns out that this sixth grader, Zach Wright, was the only interview I needed that day.
Do you know where the fish came from that was in your taco on Monday?
Actually, no, I don't.
It was caught here in Sitka.
Sweet!
Does it make any difference to you where your food comes from?
It's cool if it was here because it's like we're using it from around. We're not shipping from other places and we get to use less money.
The perfect student interview. Sweet. In Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
This is Annie Feit at APRN in Anchorage. My favorite story I worked on this year was about a group of military widows who came to Alaska for a retreat this summer. They wanted to bond with other women who understood what they were going through and, of course, have an Alaskan adventure. I followed them during a morning of rappelling off cliffs near Girdwood. Right away, I met Cheryl Dodson from North Carolina. She expressed concerns.
I'm really nervous about this.
But when it was her turn, Cheryl backed off the edge of the cliff with this amazing confidence and was whooping it up all the way down.
That was so awesome. I can't believe I did it. Yay! It was exhilarating. It was awesome. I want to do a bigger one now.
Yeah. She did two more cliffs that day, and I can only assume went back to North Carolina with new friends and a newfound love of Alaska. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. Here's a sound that stuck in my head for a good part of 2011. That's a sea otter being captured last spring near the village of Cake. I don't speak otter, but I think it was saying it had absolutely no interest in being tagged and fitted with a radio transmitter. I'm a science geek who also covers a lot of economic issues, so sea otters fit right into my idea of an interesting story. That's because their population and range are growing rapidly. They're having a serious impact on crabbers and divers who make their living off some of what the otters catch. And they catch a lot.
It's kind of like watching a Tasmanian devil eat.
Sonny Rice of Petersburg's Marine Advisory Program is just one of the people I interviewed this year on the subject. And I'm sure I'll talk to more. Another researcher just told me we're nowhere near the end of otter population growth. In Juneau, I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Center for Distance Education at UAF, offering access to online courses from any location. Spring semester starts January 20th. Information at distance.uaf.edu.
8 hours after you quit smoking, your blood oxygen level returns to normal. In 3 months, your lung function improves up to 30%. And 10 years after you quit, your risk of dying from lung cancer is about half that of a smoker. But right now, you're one cigarette closer to cancer. Every cigarette makes you sick, so quit smoking today. Information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmiut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Kristen Spack. This week on AK, a sane skipper soothes his sensitive skiff man. Alaska is famous for its rough-and-tumble fishing industry. Some say you've got to be tough to make it as a commercial salmon seiner, but that's not always the case. Crabbait Radio witnessed another side of seining last summer.
Get ready to close it up. All right. Oh, man, that's a big set. Okay. Close it up now. Close it fast. No. I said keep off the beach. Keep off the beach. You dumb mother moron. What's that? Are you crying?
Yeah, stop yelling at me, okay?
Oh, come on now. This ain't nursery school. You gotta pull it together now.
You're always shouting at me. It hurts my feelings when you scream like that.
Are you kidding me? Okay. Wait a second here. Take a deep breath. I see what's going on, okay? Now listen to me now. What you're feeling is disapproval and rejection. That's normal. It stems partly from my yelling, but it's magnified by your sense of guilt for missing the set. And I think what you need is a little deep breathing, maybe some yoga. Just relax. I want you to take a deep breath now and just calm down. Just think about what a great job you usually do.
Really? Really? You really mean it? You don't just say that?
Sure I do. You're a wonderful skiff man. The best ever. Now close it up, okay?
Well, I don't know. You really hurt my feelings on that.
I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. It's just that missing the set, well, it makes me sad and a little bit disappointed and just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit angry.
Hey, off. You gonna close up the set and get off the point anytime soon? You got 8 of us in line here waiting.
Just hold your horses, Bob. I got a sensitive situation here. My skiff man here just needs a little gentle encouragement, don't you?
Well, tell me you love me.
What?
I just need you to tell me you love me.
We all love you. You're just an absolutely stand-up, all-around great guy and a top-notch skiff driver. Now buck up, buddy. When you get back on board, we're going to have the biggest group hug ever. And it's ice cream for dessert tonight.
Whenever you guys are done with your damn counseling session, some of us would love to make a set before the season's over.
Blow it out, your you son of a slimy, stinking face. Now you really hurt his feelings.
Oh, everyone's mad at me. Oh.
It's okay, buddy. No one's mad at you, right? In fact, those other skippers are just kidding around. You're the most popular skiff man in the fleet, right? Right, boys?
Yeah, right. Sure.
Oh yeah, sure. No problem.
Yeah, definitely. Sure.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So come on, guys. 3 cheers for my skiff man. Hip hip hooray! Hip hip hooray!
Hip hip hooray!
All right, now I bet you're ready to turn that frown upside down, buddy, and get into gear and close up that big fat set, right?
But Skip, I can't.
You can't?
I got a blister in my hand and it hurts when I steer the skiff.
Oh, well, guess what? I got a SpongeBob Band-Aid with your name on it.
All right, I'm closing it up!
That was a little comedy from Crabbait Radio, which is produced by Matt Lichtenstein and Joe Vicknicki at KFSK in Petersburg. Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're visiting the town of Houston, a small community about 50 miles north of Anchorage on the Parks Highway. It's a hot spot for buying fireworks for New Year's Eve celebrations.
Virgie Thompson from Houston, Alaska. It's a small community where a lot of people live and love to play. We're close to about 2,000, a little over 2,000 with the last census. Yeah, we're growing, a little bit at a time. I think it's coming north. We were voted last year for the best campground in the valley, which was a real nice award. We have a lot of dog sled teams that use our trails locally, snow machiners, and a lot of cross-country skiing. We have a lot of commuters. I would consider it a bedroom community. A lot of people have moved out in this area just because they can do things recreational-wise from their home and have quick access to trails and still not that far away from amenities. You know, Anchorage permitting fireworks to be fired off on New Year's Eve, be done at 1, is quite nice for us. You know, I just hope that everyone doesn't take advantage of it and does it in a safe manner. It's kind of like a bomb's going off all night long on New Year's Eve, and you can pretty much stand on your porch and see any fireworks show about 360 degrees. It's pretty nice. There's just basically the responsibility within a certain distance from residents is just basic respect for your neighbors. There's no time that it's shut off, or I mean it's loud 24/7, 365 in the city limits. I would say just take a drive north on the Parks Highway and stop and check out the family atmosphere at the restaurant. And just enjoy the scenery, because it's beautiful.
That was Houston Mayor Virgie Thompson. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Kristen Spath.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Nome, Angela Denning Barnes and Mark Earhart in Bethel, Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Tim Ellis in Delta, Daisha Eaton in Dillingham. We had year-end reports tonight from Robert Woolsey, Annie Feit, and Ed Schoenfeld. Kristen Spack was our guest host for AK. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Happy New Year, Alaskans. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
And by
AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by ConocoPhillips Alaska and Matsu Health Foundation.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.